And now, the moment you've all been waiting for. Andy White and Nick Butler talk social media.
I think if we have an intro that's based on people scripting it, they're not going to get it.
So what do you think we should say?
Conversations around social media, technology, two of the brightest social media entrepreneurs in the south of England today.
Yeah, let me write that down.
I think the idea is we've got to go around every cafe in the south of England and record a different episode each one.
What should we call it, though?
It's all about social media. It's Andy White and the Loudmouth Man. Social media white noise.
I like it.
And now... Oh, sod it. Everything they just said.
There's somebody here.
We're rolling.
Are we recording?
We're recording.
There we are. We've started already.
I've started already.
Great.
Because we're late.
There we are. We're late.
Can I tell the listeners about my...
No, let's just say, episode number 54, social media white noise, because when you turn on the podcast, you want to know what's the episode, what's the show.
It is 54, I can confer.
You are...
Andy White.
I am Nick Butler. We are missing a cable. And Andy is upset.
I am going to offer a new service to our listeners. I now know for facts, scientifically proven, that I can make audio cables... disappear without trace in a very short period of time.
When you say scientifically proven, presumably you mean by empirical and therefore observed evidence.
Right.
Surely observing the evidence of losing something
denies you
the ability to lose it.
Did you see me when you arrived?
Well, I saw you,
with a small pile of equipment ready to go into a bag.
I certainly did.
Did you see, or did you not see, coiled on top of the interface, a dark grey... A to B USB cable?
No.
Okay, did you see the USB interface? Okay, you didn't see it, but I did. I saw it go in the bag, I saw my hand put it in the bag, and I saw that it was a dark grey USB cable, coiled up on top of the interface.
We'll get to the interesting stuff in a minute. We just need to get past the rant on this cable.
I closed the bag, and I went out with you to this coffee shop.
Yes, fantastic
coffee shop. I also saw a pale USB cable next to it that I didn't bring because I had the dark grey one.
Well, you thought you had the dark grey one.
We arrived here at the TikTok Cafe, which is in Meeting House Lane, which is a great
TikTok
coffee shop.
TikTok Cafe.
Yeah.
I have spent the last 10 minutes waiting
for the show notes
for Andy to return.
Yeah.
Enjoying, first of all, the magnificent company of Stefan, the manager here, who's explained to me all about TikTok Cafe, how it was... Belgian and a French-speaking English guy who really loved Amsterdam coffee culture, and so they sort of set up TikTok Cafe, and I'm enjoying a beetroot and chocolate cake, and a fantastic cup of coffee, and some great conversation in what I would have to say is a cafe that engenders conversation.
It's very nice. I've been to this coffee shop once before. And it is a very nice place, actually. It's very interesting decor, sort of all different wallpapers and stuff.
Well, it has all the eclectic kitsch.
Yeah.
And it has the ambience that of and you know, I can tell that you're going to be fuming about this cable, listeners.
Fuming about it because you lose faith in your ability to be sane. So when I got to the coffee shop, I opened up the bag. I got the two little power boxes for the things out. No USB cable. Nick has just witnessed me. I turned my bag inside out and tipped everything out. No USB cable. Now, that was weird enough on a one-off, but 2 weeks ago, I did exactly the same thing. I lost another cable. It was two RC connectors to a stereo 1/8-inch jack. Gone without trace. Same thing. Put it in the bag, saw it go in, got to the destination, wasn't there.
Do you suspect yourself of becoming the man who mistook his wife for a hat?
That's my daughter, that's Trilby.
Oh my God, I really can't believe you did that to me. Yes, his daughter is called Trilby.
Listen, folks,
Trilby.
I'm offering a service. I'm going to charge £2.50 initially. If you've got any audio cables you want to get rid of, you're a bit worried about landfill, I can make them disappear without trace. Simply by putting them in my bag. I think I must have a wormhole in my bag.
Why has Tracy got to be involved?
Trace.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
We've done all the name gags now.
We have.
Shall we get to the show?
Yeah.
Shall we talk what we're going to talk about?
Yeah, I'm just fuming about this rubbish cable.
He is mad. He is so mad. I tell you,
I'm going to have to physically tie it with a piece of string to the interface.
As I understand it, Julian Assange has been asked about this particular missing cable. I have to get the WikiLeaks gag in
there. You're kidding. Cable leaks.
Cable leaks.
What are we talking about today, Monsieur Le Butler?
Look, there's libraries facing closures, and I wanted to talk about shared social spaces.
Right.
And it's brilliant that we're here in TikTok, because it's the very definition of a shared social space. It's the very definition of a place to get together and chat and talk about topics and have a cup of coffee. And do something that the Brits hate. I mean, not obviously don't. I'm the loudmouth man. I'll join in any conversation if it's around me.
Yes.
People might consider that a bit rude. Conversely, I would sort of point out that, well, you know, I don't care. Because I am. Now, phone is switched off. Terribly distracted there. Shared social spaces. So up towards Milton Keynes, Stony. I want to say Stony Bridge, which is a whole other thing. Stony Library. Considering that they might be facing closure because of cutbacks from the government, irrespective of, I'm not going to talk about cuts, I'm not going to talk about, oh, it's coalition government, this and that and the other, let's put this to one side for the moment. They talked about the fact they were facing closure, and so they encouraged all the residents to go to the library and check out every book.
That's so cool.
Which I think immediately...
When you say check out, you mean literally check out, rather than just checking out.
Take the book and check them out. Now, I actually think, first of all, there's a great thing that's happened here. The council has managed to provide themselves with both free removal and free storage space.
Ooh.
Because everybody's taking books.
They've disguised things as books and made out it was a library.
Now, the library shelves are completely empty. And there's a wonderful comment in there that struck the chord with me, that where else in society will you find... 5-year-olds and 90-year-olds in the same place together at the same time.
You're not for power, Nick.
I'm fine for power, thank you.
Carry on.
My Mac Air won't take that power.
Oh, sorry, right.
And I just that absolutely struck a chord with me, because as somebody who, as a young lad, you know, I'm talking teenager now, libraries for me were where I went to at the weekend.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't interested in football. I wasn't the run-around kid that everybody else was. And this was the days before the internet and computer games and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to just hide out in libraries.
Right.
And it absolutely fascinated me as a child that I could go and pick up a book that would teach me how to capture and kill rabbits, that would teach me all about the insides of the human body, about the construction of the stars.
Yeah.
And you would just... Nobody would stop you. You could read about guns. You could read about history. You could read about warfare. And nobody would stop you from picking up a book and reading it. Nobody was there saying, oh, you're a child. You shouldn't be in the modern warfare section. Please go back to the section that's of you and read your Mimsy and Whimsy and their Red Kite Flying Day opportunities. It was brilliant. I only sort of regret, and to a certain extent, it's because as you get older and you have more income available, you suddenly start building your own library up. And we talked about this on the Kindle, and you know, your ownerships of libraries and sharing of books. But I sort of regret to a certain extent that I lost that as I grew up. Now we have Sharon and I have a daughter and a son, a 6-year-old and 2-year-old, and we take Alyssa down to the library to borrow books.
Mm-hmm.
So she borrows books, she finds out books she's interested in reading, and she begins to work out what her tastes are from that. And it is still that great experience of going into a library and it's a shared social space.
Yes.
And it's to a certain extent, this is one of the reasons we do social media white noise, because we go to cafes and we talk in a place that's already set up for having a conversation. Yeah, you can't go to modern bars nowadays with the music beating off in the background. I really regret saying beating off in the background, because somebody's probably going to be snipping that particular phrase out at a later date.
I'll make it easy for them, beating a bishop in the background.
And there doesn't seem to me to be a place where there may be fewer and fewer places. I don't believe there are. I think there are actually more places, but we don't as yet in society work out how to integrate in them. A great place to get together and socialise are cafes. Yes, of course, there's a cost to it. Yes, okay, people are sitting down having coffee, having tea, having cakes, and that's got to be paid for somehow. But I'd sort of challenge that it's a heck of a lot more sociable than going to a bar or trying to go to a pub garden Not that I'm averse to suggesting we might go to a pub garden in the summertime.
Hey, we might have to become pub gardens, Nick, in the summertime, as we run out of coffee shops, even in Brighton.
But I'm fascinated with this concept that the council were aware that there was a social contribution of the library in their town that would be lost by its closure.
Mm.
They became aware to the point that they sought action from the residents, which is exactly what we should be expecting councils to do, is to get resident. There is this terrible attitude where we sit back and say, council should just do stuff. And yeah, the council should just do stuff, but that actually comes with costs, etc., etc. And if you can spot something that should be being done, then, and especially if the council has done it for you, then it's a great time to say, well, let's actually sort this out. Let's prove that we really love our library. Let's prove we really love our social spaces.
Just out of interest, how did the council get the message out to the people?
They wrote to people. Letters.
A physical paper letter. A dead tree letter.
I know, dead tree letters, because to a certain extent, this is the groups that we're looking at. The article's from Boing Boing. I mean, Cory Doctorow has highlighted it.
Yeah.
I know that other people have been talking about the problems of libraries closing down.
Mm.
Neil Gaiman himself on Twitter, is keen to expound the point of view that libraries are a very important place, that there's a missed opportunity for many children. There was a great concern a few months back when there was talk about the government taking away the free books from kids. And, we're taking away free books. I didn't grow up with free books myself. And so libraries were this, like, I can go there and I can say to them, I'd like this book, and they would then go and get that book on the shelf, and I'd be able to check the book out.
Mm.
And so suddenly I was without, bereft of pocket money,
mm.
but free to have access to this huge library of books. I can't possibly describe how great that is until you realise that, well, the internet comes along.
Mm.
As a teenager, and I'm looking at the internet as a 20-year-old, and I'm thinking, here's a library of free books. Here's this big free access to everything. And it's freely available to everybody who's got access to this, can then go off and out, like Wikipedia.
Well, if some of the books are free, aren't they?
Express.
Some of the books are free.
Some books are, we're back to the sort of Kindle conversation.
Yeah.
But there are many, many more books, and we're back to the sort of questions about copyright and so forth that we've talked about.
Right.
And all of these things, we sort of wonder what impact things like the Kindle will have on society, in terms of lending books. We're in a shop right now that has books on a bookshelf that are there for people to go up and read. And you couldn't have that in a DRM society. Mm. And I've brought this up before. I honestly believe that digital rights management damages cultural inheritance.
Yeah, because what about what about copyright? How do libraries get around copyright?
Well, there are special exemptions, special licenses, and so forth. There are special rules that are put in place to say, libraries get a certain type of exemption, a certain way in which to use and handle documents. But they're also faced with the issues over orphaned works for which you cannot identify an author,
right,
but for which you now have access to. So do they have rights through it? Do they not have rights through it? And so on.
Right, yeah.
And we've got to sort of differentiate here between copyright and digital rights management.
Mm.
Because digital rights management is taking cultural content and wrapping it up in control that takes it away from the very culture that was its sort of birthplace, its creation, its reason for being there. And it sort of says, okay, well, these have been measured and pulled away. Imagine if the Beatles had been so DRM that nobody ever got to hear them unless they were, they had an Apple iPod. I know, just the Beatles. I don't really care about the Beatles, but it's just pull up on that point.
I've got to, because I'm in such a ranty mood, because they're losing that USB cable into thin air, making it disappear. I've got to talk about BT Connect.
We have.
Were you ready to talk about that?
I was, yes.
Because I saw this, it was a couple of weeks, could even be a couple of weeks ago. It was about the same time we recorded the last show, actually. It was probably before then. And it's just, can you just outline what they're planning? Because I sort of skimmed over it and thought, this doesn't look good.
BT have already suggested that the way we need to get better broadband delivery out is to consider hubs.
Right.
Hubs are areas where everybody connects to. The first thing I've got to worry about is that when Jeremy Hunt and Ed Vasey start talking about what BT are going to do with the internet, we should all run a mile in terror, because BT have held back Britain's progress in delivering high-speed internet to every household, and they have done absolutely everything they can to ensure that the products that they're trying to focus on being delivered are the ones that they want to promote. And those products have never been in the best interests of the end user. They've always been, because, you know, they're a business, their products are going to be in the interest of their business and their shareholders. Where we're at with BT Connect is a product that will go in at close to the curb level of delivery. So, if, you know, you have the green boxes, your little green boxes with the telephones. Those are now being all upgraded, and especially if you're living in towns where they're upgrading them, they're putting in the new sort of 21st century network stuff. So they're putting fibre to the hub,
right,
which is to the curb. So it's not to your house, not to your home.
Fibre to the green box.
So fibre to the green box, and then it's disseminated out from there. Okay, that's a little bit smarter because the technology means that, well, we've got faster technology closer to the edge before it bleeds out into the houses. The reality is it should be fibre to the home. It should be fibre to every home, but I'll get back to that. With the Connect product, they're looking to offer a content delivery network. In other words, a mechanism that says if you want to host a file and stream that file to the end user in Britain, we will provide a service to you that will guarantee higher quality of delivery through our service than through any other service. So if you're Amazon or you're Google and you have your own content delivery network for delivering stuff to the very edge of delivery before it gets there, almost to the ISP, and then from the ISP it goes down to the user, you are now facing the fact that BT are shoving you off into a completely different service lane to enable their product to have the priority. So it's the sort of how BT begins to screw with net neutrality by saying, I see it already, because I see certain things like, I'm going to mention Documentally here, Documentally wants to go with BT because BT control all the pipes. That's not actually how the internet works, but for as long as people think that's how it works, then, you know, BT can continue to create this sort of theory that they have a stronger control of what will get to your house than anybody else.
But, okay, so let me get this right. BT is saying, we will offer you this service where if you want to stream a file to the public, to the internet, we will give you a specialised service that will guarantee what better delivery than what?
And it's not being paid for by the customer, it's being paid for by the supplier. So if you're a website and you want to set up, the cost of setup at the moment on the internet is really cheap.
Right.
Because of a thing called net neutrality, because the cost of entry on the internet is the same for everybody. So there's a very low cost to set up a website that hosts podcasts and do content delivery. GeekPlanet Online. Which costs them £60 a month for thousands of listeners and thousands of podcasts.
I think I'm getting it. So they're going to prioritise the traffic that their clients have paid for over other traffic over all of the rest of the internet.
So now, if you're GeekPlanet Online and you want to ensure you get better quality of service to your clients, you're going to expect to be paying a bit more again to get out to that range of clients. If you want to get to BT clients, well, you better pay a subscription to get to BT clients, because BT clients are going to get better quality of service from BT's products, but they're not going to get better quality of service. So you imagine you start paying ISPs. Well, the smaller ISPs will get the first look out, because they won't be able to put the infrastructure in place to provide that service to all their users, so they start to get cut out. The end users begin flocking to services that are offering faster services, because larger businesses like the Googles and so forth can afford to pay for that infrastructure whilst they're using their own infrastructure.
Right. But are BT using shared infrastructure, or are they putting fibre in place just for this service?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
Because if they were putting fibre in place just for the service, so this service, is that kind of all right? But if they're using existing infrastructure, which they're subletting out to other ISPs...
I always sort of go to the Eddie Stobart position here, and imagine
Eddie Stobart,
who own the big trucking companies and do the delivery and the courier work. Imagine if they were in control of all the roads in the UK, and they were responsible for road delivery in the UK, and you were a courier company, and you were told, well, you're only going to be restricted to A roads, you're not allowed on the motorways,
right?
Because you're not Eddie Stobart. Because Eddie Stobart says, unless you want to pay to use the motorways, you won't be able to use our motorways. There'd be a huge uproar. All these services, all these infrastructure services that enable other services to work, they have to be delivered at a really level, low cost to everybody. And you want to set up a motorcycle courier company, you're not paying one level of road tax and then at a separate license to one group of people for accessing certain roads and another group of people for accessing other certain roads. People just wouldn't go for that.
What are Ofcom saying about this? Do we know?
Well, Ofcom and this one are, as usual, as far as they can say at the moment, they can't see where it's a problem.
Right.
Because it isn't a problem. Because Ofcom's biggest position is only to wait until there's a problem and then we'll start talking about it. I've rarely ever seen Ofcom jump into something early enough to say that'll be an issue. And to a certain extent, what teeth have we given Ofcom to do anything about it anyway? It is not like Ofcom can turn around and say, well, your competitor company, we're now going to offer them this freeing up of this position.
Mm.
They can't turn around to somebody who isn't BT and say, well, we're going to make it easier for BT to compete with you by removing the following regulations or adding the following stipulations. It's frustrating and it's annoying because there is just so much that BT have not done in the last 30 years that has resulted in me living in a country where I'm seeing people in, like, the north of England are having to dig their own cableways to lay their own gigabit network.
Is that happening?
That's happening. There's actually a link I put out this morning.
We should tell 38 Degrees about this. Have you, do you have
38 degrees are actually on this. 38 Degrees and the Open Rights Group are both onto this in terms of conversations and communications, and here are the issues.
Because I normally get emails from 38 Degrees saying, oh, they're planning to sell our forest, or let's put some artful dodger tax avoidance things up to embarrass.
Yeah, they have at least some of the most, what I would call, lively involvement with the online community.
Mm.
But where BT Connect are going with this product has me concerned that this will be a bit like BT's ISDN BT Highway. Do you remember BT Highway?
Yeah.
The ISDN service they used to sell you.
I remember.
Which would be a 64 kilobit both ways connection that you would then get for your ADSL connection. And it cost them like £200 a month.
Mm.
And they would sell you that, or you could just have a telephone line that did as maximum 56K.
Right.
And you'd have to be happy with that.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, but if you went with BT Highway and BT for us, then you'll get much better quality of service, but you'll use BT. So they wanted people to use their ISDN circuits, because that's where all their money had gone into, was selling ISDN circuits. Mm. Lease lines to businesses were what... There was a point, I can remember this really clearly, and it was early, it was late 90s, early in 2000s, where there was a strong push by BT that people make use of their leased lines infrastructure rather than buying in BT Highway, or rather than putting in telephone lines with dial-up modems. And it was as if BT were like, oh, well, we don't really want to provide anything that isn't leased line.
Mm.
And you know, we've now got you for a couple of years on this leased line contract. And I know two companies that were just crippled by it.
Really?
And I'm concerned that we don't have anything to compete, but there we go.
I got a call from Virgin Media about a week ago saying, oh yeah, do you try and persuade me to go onto their broadband? And they were saying to me, the guy said to me, because I was rubbing my hands together, the guy said to me, is there a specific reason why you wouldn't want to change? So I started ranting about net neutrality and form, and he didn't know what the hell I was talking about, and he just backed down and they go, oh, that's fine, yeah, okay, bye.
I switched from Zen to Sky.
Right.
Because Zen had been overcharging me for a service that they could have provided much cheaper, but just never got in contact with me about it. They just were like, oh, you're paying out for that service.
I'm with Zen.
And I sort of went to them about a problem with the service delivery, and they said, well, we can't give you more than 8 megabits where you are.
Yeah.
And you're on this service level. And I said, well, why didn't you put me on a cheaper service level?
Yeah.
You could have put me on a cheaper service level for starters. Because I wasn't a big expensive service level from years ago, and because I sort of just always assumed I was getting the best deal from Zen, and it was working. So Sky, when I was upgrading to Sky Anytime H Plus HD and the rest of it, said, have you considered Sky Broadband? I said, well, I have, but to be honest, my core concern is that I do the best part of 50 gigs a month in data.
Yeah,
I do a lot of data because I back up a lot of files, I download a lot of movies, I download video games, all legally, and that uses up a lot of data.
Yeah.
And the woman who was on the phone to me was knowledgeable enough to know about broadband usage, caps. She talked about, oh, we don't do unlimited. We you can have this unlimited service, you know, it's universal, and we won't charge you for how much you download. We're the only ISP who legitimately say in our small print that we will not cap you if you're on this service. And they haven't, and I've been doing, you know, silly amounts of data, and they haven't been capping me.
Okay.
And I've been on, and here's the most annoying part in all this is BT, even today, will say I can't get more than 8 megabits on my service, and I've got screen caps that show I get 14.
Right.
So BT's own services aren't reporting correctly what is available.
But are they bursting to 14, or are you getting 14 consistently?
I get 14 consistently.
Really?
Yes, okay. This isn't a burst, this isn't a contention issue.
Right.
And the contention conversation keeps coming around. Oh, you know, it's a contention. How many other people on your street are using your service? That'll then determine how much you're... Well, no, contention doesn't either work that way either. People keep thinking in terms of pipes. Mm. And they keep thinking in terms of the motorway lanes and not really realising that contention's actually a staggered thing as well. So it's not quite the same as if there are 20 people online, then you're only getting 1/120th of it.
Right.
Because TCP doesn't work that way. So... Yeah, ISPs don't work that way, and connections don't work that way. So the 20-to-1 ratio is a number that's put out there as a safety margin, but not an accurate number. But we're talking about TCP IP.
We've got to move on. Just before we do, have you got any sponsors to praise?
I have.
Praise the sponsors.
I have to praise the sponsors. So eBuyer. For our coffee. Another. Yep. Actually, I was really glad this week because I didn't have an opportunity to shop at eBuyer. I actually had to go to Maplin's. I would say it's only comparable in experience to shopping at eBuyer. But when people phone me up and they say, I'm thinking of buying a computer, actually Clive Walker tweeted me and said, I'm looking at this product on eBuyer. And I said, well, you know, what's your budget and what's your performance requirements? What are you looking for? And through eBuyer's interface, I was able to then put in the criteria to say, you know, if we were spending this much, what could we get? Mm-hmm. If we're spending this much with this sort of memory, what do we get? If we're spending this much with this memory, this hard drive from this manufacturer, what do we get? Mm-hmm. And it took minutes to come up with three different recommendations, to look at those recommendations and realise that the thing he was looking at was his best choice, and to realise he was getting it for under £500. Fantastic. eBuyer makes shopping for technology straightforward with a fantastic delivery promise. I know that I've ordered things at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they've been there at 9 o'clock in the morning, and they put Amazon to shame now. So thank you, eBuyer, for the coffee.
Yes, thank you very much.
Enjoying and the.
Talking of the coffee, how was the coffee? The
coffee was very good.
What's your innuendo description of the coffee?
And do you see those? I'm not doing those.
They do them in the morning. They do the rude innuendo coffee description.
I won't do it on demand. It's rather hard.
Do it now.
So it's a great coffee. I only wish I could sort of flag and say, could I get another coffee? But she's walking out the other way, so I'm not making.
We're sitting on a giant squash toaster here, aren't we?
Well, right. That doesn't quite make sense. IPv6 day is coming up.
What is?
I was going to say, can I get another coffee, please?
Another coffee.
Yeah, fantastic.
Can I have another tea, please, as well?
Whilst we're recording here.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Black Americana, just as before. Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
IPv6 day is coming up.
What's this one
about? How much time have we got left, Andy?
Let me just look at the time. 20. Just coming up to 27 minutes, so we need to make it snappy.
Okay, so we'll have to talk about IPv6 next show.
Yeah.
But IPv6 day is coming up.
Yeah.
And what we're doing with IPv6 is more than just getting more addresses on the internet. IPv6 is going to change how we're using the internet, how we're using technology today. Because it isn't just about, oh, you'll get more addresses on the internet. It's the fact that you won't need to set up special rules on your router to get packets from the internet to your device. So your Xbox, if it's on IPv6, can always be part of the Xbox network because it's got an IPv6 address.
So it's very own address.
So what most people think is, oh, I have my network where everything has the same address. Mm. We can now have a network, an internet, where everything can have a unique address and it doesn't matter where it is.
Yeah.
Network addresses have always been about this concept of having a path from one place to another. Mm. This is all part of that group, that's all part of this group. IPv6 means everything gets an address.
Yeah.
But all those addresses can also contain multiple addresses. So you could have a separate network that is your network of addresses, which are associated, so you can assign multiple addresses to devices.
Okay. Yeah.
So when you take IPv6 into account, we're not saying it's just more addresses, because everybody just thinks, oh, every device will get one address. A device can have multiple addresses on the internet, and each one of those addresses could be a separate relationship. So one address space could be its relationship to the manufacturer.
Yeah.
Another address space could be its relationship to an application provider.
A network card already have more than one IP address.
A network card can have more than one IP address.
Yeah, like an alias, whatever you call it, yeah.
But if the network card is your washing machine in your house, and you've got power over an Ethernet plugged in, so you plug in your washing machine. So instead of putting a separate network card into the washing machine, you just put the network card in the plugs.
Yeah.
And every plug can talk to the private network that's inside the washing machine. Mm. That washing machine might have an address that is, it, you don't need to know what that address is. The router doesn't need to know what its address is, per se. It can then talk to the manufacturer, or it can talk to the application that's on your iPhone. And each one of these addresses forms a... What if your credit card had an IP address? So that your credit card has an IP address along with your mobile phone. So if somebody clones your credit card, and your credit card's IP address appears at a place that's further away from where your phone is at the moment,
you caught them.
So there's... Thanks very much. Here we go. Return the coffees. That's great stuff. And they're taking away the beetroot and chocolate coffee, which was...
It was beetroot and chocolate.
Chocolate cake. It was. And it was beetroot fantastic. Cake. It goes up there with Marmite and chocolate.
Wow.
Which has
maybe
to be done.
We should try that next time.
We have to. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks.
So what IPv6 is doing is... changing, because at the moment we have an internet that's based on IPv4, which means we have a sort of, we have a structure that's based on how we're going to put things together in a tree of networks and a path of networks as they're held together. But once you do IPv6, you don't need to have that sort of segregation of networks and network of networks hanging together. Everything becomes an individual.
Yes.
And if everything becomes an individual, such that all the routers are routing the packets as they need to. And the thing about IPv6 is it's the IP specification, it's not the TCP specification.
It's the IP.
It's the IP. So the IP specification is beginning to do some smart things. It's beginning to look at how packets are being routed if they're broadcasting for media. If they're sending UDP packets, then they might need to be a little bit more efficient than if they're sending TCP packets.
This isn't a net neutrality issue, is it?
Oh, we could get into a whole other net neutrality issue here.
But make it easier for net neutrality people.
There's this thing where people say, well, make it easier for people to track you down. Well, no, actually, it kind of makes it harder. Because scanning, you can scan the whole of the internet in a few hours by just plugging in all the IP address ranges and letting it scan. You would need the length of the universe to scan all of the IPv6 addresses. If you wanted to hide a machine online... you would just give it an IPv6 address and it would be harder to find. It would make it almost impossible to find. You couldn't do a scan of the network by broadcast packet inquiry and then waiting for the packets to come back.
Take too long.
Because you wouldn't have enough time.
Yeah.
So there's a whole different...
So the spec is dealing with that.
The spec deals with that. So we also then get into things like, well, actually, you then get away from needing centralised web servers in the role that we currently have them. Because you could create a service, a web service, based on application live on the internet, so that you have a Twitter application that's looking at your friends' Twitter applications, but only by talking to your friends' apps. So the apps could be a mesh network. Mesh networks make a lot more sense in IPv6 than they do in IPv4, because you can do smarter things with IPv6 that you were struggling with.
Yeah, my head's exploding!
But I will cover this again. If people want to throw questions... about IPV6, I will answer them in the next show.
32 minutes gone. We better wrap it up. I've been Andy White, Acker Doctor Pod. Don't forget, new service, £2.50. I can make any computer or audio cable disappear into thin air.
And actually, if you want to spend more than £2.50, visit the donate button on social media, whitenoise.com. Put down a fiver, because both Andy and I can make a cup of tea and coffee disappear over half an hour of thin air. And we appreciate your donations. I've been Nick Butler, a.k.a. The Loudmouth Man, twitter.com/loudmouthman. This is episode 54, Where the Hell Did Our Cable Go?
See you, folks. Bye. Goodbye. Thanks for listening to Social Media White Noise, brought to you by Andy White, aka Dr. Pod, and Nick Butler, aka Loudmouth Man. Please visit www.socialmediawhitenoise.com, where you can leave comments, listen to the show straight from the webpage, and subscribe for free. Email us at ulot@socialmediawhitenoise.com. Follow us on Twitter, Dr. Pod, and Loudmouth Man. We'd like to thank the coffee shops of Sussex, Social Media and Technology, without whom this show would not be possible. See you soon. Peace.